Nice to see you all this morning. Good to be here. It's nice to have the opportunity to give these talks. I was telling Peter the other day that every time I do one of these, it really helps my own understanding get deeper. So in Buddhism, there's three levels of knowledge. One level is the knowledge you get from reading or hearing about things. And then the second level is the knowledge that comes from thinking and using your reasoning about what you've read or heard. Then the third level of knowledge is realization. And so I'll be thinking about things that are really interesting to me, and then when I'm preparing to give a talk, I realize that my understanding isn't as deep as I thought it was. And so in trying to put together my thoughts, it really helps me clarify my understanding. I'm going to be referring to a book in this talk by the Venerable Virasakvara Dhammo. It's called Suffering and No Suffering. It's an amazing book, and I've been reading it every day since June. Actually, I've had this book for about 25 years, and Mary and I and some others started the mindfulness community of Milwaukee at our house in the early 90s. And after a time, some of the people, well, we were the mindfulness sangha. And then after a while, some people split off and became the mindfulness community. And Mary and I and some others, they wanted to go public and go big. And we were content just with a small group, so we didn't. And our sangha continued as the Mary, Shirley, and Chuck sangha. And we got listed, we followed Thich Nhat Hanh at that time. And so we were, there was all the, these, True Heart of the Midwest sangha, and Sunflower Sangha, and then it was the Mary, Shirley, and Chuck Sangha. And every once in a while, we would get a book from someplace. Someone would send out a book to all the sanghas, to spread the Dharma. So we got this book, and suffering and no suffering, that doesn't look like fun. And so I put it on my bookshelf, and there it sat for 25 years. And last summer, a funny thing happened. I went to see a teacher that I try to see when she comes around. She's a teacher from India. Peter also studies with her. Her name is Amichi, and she's called the Hugging Saint. And her full name is Mata Amritanandamayi Devi, and it means the mother of the nectar of divine bliss. Right? So what's wrong with that? And I mentioned, Peter and I were talking about her the other day, and I said, I think she's the closest person that I've ever seen. She's the person that comes closest to a living Buddha. Not that I'm in a position to judge, but when you're with her, you just kind of you end up gazing at her, because this person is in the moment, in the moment, in the moment, in the moment. And it's like looking at a river, it's just, you see this person, and it's an act of nature, isn't it? Mm-hmm. A force of nature. Yeah. Well, we all are, So, anyway, I won't go on with the metaphor, but she's an amazing person, and so, it's nice. And I was with her, and the Buddha recommends spending time with wise persons. So I feel that's, I'm doing a good thing by doing that, and I, you know, you, it's hard to say what happens, except, you know, my guess is that her vibration is so high, it stimulates everybody in some way. So I got home, and I'm sitting in my room, and this book like jumped out at me. You know, it's like the book that's been sitting there for 26 years. I went, suffering and no suffering, what is that? And I took the book out off the shelf, and I started reading it, and it's like, and now it's 6 months later, and I read it every day. But I've gone through it a couple times, but now in the morning, I can only get about a few sentences into it, and then I just like want to think about what I've read, because it's just remarkable. So my talk is about suffering today, and I guess I'm an expert in it because I've had 65 years of experience with suffering, my own suffering, and hopefully not inflicting too much suffering on other people through my own suffering. And I think I suffer more than I should. I really do. Because I'm a psychotherapist, and I've been meditating for a long time. And I certainly suffer more than I want to. And I'm pretty sure I suffer more than I need to. You know, but or maybe I haven't suffered enough yet, because I haven't gotten to the point where I've had enough of suffering. You know, and maybe I'll get to that point where I just finally get disgusted with suffering in general and get tired of going down that same path. I know where it takes me. It takes me to suffering. Why do I do that? Because of ignorance. So, So the name of this talk is Where Does Suffering Come From? And I mentioned that to my friend Andy, and he went he slowly raised his finger and pointed at his head. And I'm glad he didn't slowly point at me. But I thought that was an accurate response from him. You know, because this is where suffering comes from. And also, a lot of times we point to other people as that's where suffering comes from. It's like, well, my suffering comes from what you've done. And actually, that's true. I mean, suffering does come from other people because we're all interrelated. You know, so you can't be unkind to somebody and then have them suffer and say, dude, it's your problem. You know, check out Buddhism. You know, it's your suffering. So, no. We definitely suffer because of what other people do and because of what other people don't do. Because other people's inability to recognize our suffering, you know, through greed or self-cherishing, or self-class cherishing, you know, and that causes other people to suffer. But then there's a deeper level of suffering, and that deeper level is what Buddhism most deeply addresses, I think, and that's our reaction to suffering. So suffering is unavoidable. You know, because as Buddha said, no one is immune from sickness, old age, and death. And even if somebody has the good luck of being physically healthy all their life, whenever they get jealous or envious or angry, they're sick. That's sickness. Everybody has sickness and suffering. But we can do something about how deeply it affects us. I think one of the most profound teachings I ever got in, along these lines happened in my 20s, and something happened that was just driving me crazy, and I was obsessing about it. And coincidentally, a friend was passing through town from Colorado, and he was crashing on my couch. I was in my 20s. And I'm saying to him, "Tom, this and that and this," you know, and I'm just going. And he said, "Chuck, don't feed it." And I'm like, "What do you even mean?" And he says, it's like throwing wood on the fire. You're going over it and you're feeding it, and you're causing yourself to suffer more and more. And it was like someone hit a gong, because I hadn't even seen that I was doing that. So anyway, I continue to do that, but it's like more and more I'm aware of doing it. I'm getting better at it. So in the world of psychotherapy, this is called self-disclosure. And it can be good to do, I think, in general, because I know we all suffer. Everybody here suffers. And so, you know, I thought, gee, wouldn't it be great to be able to talk about this stuff from a position where you've got it all handled? On the other hand, I think there's value in us sharing as peers, you know, trading notes. Maybe that's even more valuable. In any case, that's where I'm at. Okay. A couple thoughts about suffering. People often think that suffering is something that's in our minds as a constant, and that we have to somehow get rid of the suffering. And actually, there are approaches to psychotherapy that have that view, like primal scream therapy was based on the notion that there's a certain amount of pent-up rage, you got to get it out. And, you know, once you get to the point where you get it out, you're clear. And I wonder if Scientology has some of that too, because they talk about clearing and things like that. I shouldn't say, because I don't know anything about Scientology. But I wonder. But according to Buddhism, that's not the case. That's not reality. Because in Buddhism, everything is impermanent, including suffering. And this past summer, Thich Nhat Hanh said, because suffering is impermanent, that's why we can transform it. Because happiness is impermanent, that's why we must nourish it. So, and then Buddha said something. When Buddha became enlightened, he said, the original mind is luminous. It is tarnished by the presence of visiting defilements. The original mind is luminous. It is untarnished due to the absence of visiting defilements. So that which corrupts or defiles or agitates the mind is visiting. It's temporary. Meanwhile, the mind keeps returning to the luminous state, free of suffering. Virasak Viradamo makes that point, and he says that happens throughout the day for everybody. But we don't notice it, because it's kind of, there's nothing there. It's an empty mind. And we're conditioned to pay attention to, you know, when we hurt, we know it. Someone says something mean to me, I hurt, I know it. Or something good happens, I feel happy, I know it. But that middle mind is, we keep coming back to that. It's kind of interesting, because that's where the experience of contentment is. is in that middle place. Contentment is not out there with excitement, because that excitement comes and goes. Also, people, including many Buddhists, have the notion that the self, or the me, or the I, or the ego, is kind of a permanent thing, that in spiritual practice we somehow have to eradicate the ego, get rid of the ego. But also in Buddhism, the ego is not a permanent thing. Let me read a paragraph about that from Virasagpuradam. He says, Atta, or self, you know, when we say no self, that's anatta. But Atta, or self, or I, or ego, is not present in the human mind at all times. It arises in accordance with the law of dependent origination, pati icchacha sama upada, which states, if contact occurs, feeling arises. Upon feeling, desire arises. Upon desire, attachment arises. Upon attachment, being or existence arises. Upon being or existence, birth arises. Thus, a new mind and a new body have arisen completely. This is the birth in concept of I. When this birth is body and mind, it is called life, or atta, or ego. So as we can see, desire and attachment at feeling cause atta, or ego, to arise momentarily. We can prevent or keep the mind from atta by detaching from the feeling that arises at the moment of contact. When atta does not arise, suffering and all the problems associated with human life do not arise. So in Zen, we have the saying, no self, no problem. There's a contemporary Irish spiritual teacher that I like, Jack O'Keefe, and she says something similar very briefly. She says, ego presents great fear at the thought of its own annihilation. But when the ego is not given attention, where is it? What is it? It is only an idea, and hence there is nothing that can be annihilated. This is very Buddhist. Swami Muktananda has a book that I have, which I never read, but I love the title. And the title is Getting Rid of What You Haven't Got. I love that. Isn't that great? I should read it because it's my favorite kind of book, which is a very small book, very thin book. So let me just read something that the Buddha says about suffering. This is from the Dhammapada, which means footsteps on the path. It's the early words of the Buddha. And he says, the very first thing in this collection, mind is the forerunner of all actions. All deeds are led by mind, created by mind. If one speaks or acts with a corrupt mind, suffering follows, as the wheel follows the hoof of an ox pulling a cart. And then he says, mind is the forerunner of all actions. All deeds are led by mind, created by mind. If one speaks or acts with a serene mind, happiness follows, as surely as one's shadow. So I have verified that in my life for sure, that when I've spoken with a corrupt mind, suffering follows. No question about it. I verified that over and over and over again. And occasionally, I've also verified that when I speak with a serene mind, I found this in psychotherapy, which is kind of a fun thing to do. It's a really fun job. It's kind of a lab, you know? And people, they pay you to be your best, you know, to be calm and clear. And you know, it's like theater in a way, because, you know, you're expected to occupy that role. You know, you get support from your client. Mm-hmm. And although, you know, sometimes you have to give them a little self-disclosure, because I've had many clients say, "Do you ever have a bad day?" And I say, "Well, ask my wife." No, don't ask my wife. But I've had the experience that when my mind is calm, I can say just about anything, and suffering doesn't follow. So if I need to confront someone in psychotherapy, if I'm not feeling clear and calm, I don't go there, you know, because you're on thin ice. But if I'm feeling stable and clear and my heart is open, you know, you can say anything with compassion and clarity. And it's amazing how effective that can be. So, well, we know that suffering, as Buddhists, we know that suffering comes from desire and attachment, right? But where does desire and attachment come from? It comes from ignorance. So again, Virasak Viradamo says that in Buddhism, I'll try and wrap this up in a few minutes so we have time to talk. I can't believe it's already 10 to 11. Did we get started late? Or I just got carried away with myself? Okay. All right, so he says, we'll save the rest of it for another talk, maybe. But he says, in Buddhism, ignorance is defined as the failure to fully realize 8 things. Suffering, the cause of suffering, no suffering, the path leading to no suffering, the past, the future, in between the past and future, and finally, paticca samuppada, the law of dependent origination, which breaks down how suffering happens. So you'll recognize the first 4 is the 4 noble truths: suffering and the cause of suffering, cause and effect. And then the next set is no suffering, which is, Buddha didn't mean getting rid of suffering. He meant no suffering. That place, according to Virasak Viradamo, the quality of the mind that is already pure and free of suffering. So no suffering, and the path leading to no suffering, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. So, very hard to fully realize that. So he says, ignorance is the failure to fully realize these 8 things. So, you know. And then he says, the failure to fully realize the past. Well, the past is over. What's the problem? Or the failure to realize the future. The future isn't here. And then the 7th point is between the past and the future. So this is not rocket science. We know the past is over and the future hasn't come, but it's very hard to fully realize that. Our lives were pulled into the past and in the future. And then the 8th is the dependent origination, which, if you get a chance, I recommend it. I mean, for me, that was my least favorite part of Buddhism. You know, and I've heard several Dharma talks on the dependent origination, and it always seemed like, well, what's the point? How does that relate to me? It just seemed arcane and esoteric. But now I understand that it's a wondrous thing. It's just an amazing thing, because Buddha deconstructs our experience so that we can see what happens. Because life has a lot of moving parts. Well, you might want to edit that quote out of there. Life has a lot of moving parts. Now that I'm thinking, but it's probably true. But, you know, suffering has a lot of moving parts. And Buddha slows it down and breaks it down and says, look, wait, this is what's happening. When we have contact with something unpleasant, that's suffering. You know, you could stub your toe. Any of the senses that encounters anything unpleasant is considered pain. So we have six senses, right? The five regular senses. And then our mind is the sixth sense. And the object that the mind senses is thoughts. And so when we have an unpleasant thought, that's pain in Buddhism. It stimulates the nervous system. And so that's pain. And then we have desire that comes, either if it's pleasant, if it's pleasurable, we have the desire for more. Or if it's unpleasurable, we have the desire to not have that. But then if we attach to that, then that's where all the suffering follows. So, anyway, it's just an incredible thing. And the being and the birth that come from that, those are the six realms. You know, hell realm, animal, hungry ghost, human, fighting spirits, and heavenly beings, not in that order. So, anyway, that's probably enough. Another time I would like to talk about the dependent origination, because it's just so wonderful. But anyway, thank you for your kind attention, and let's discuss amongst ourselves. What stirs in you with this about suffering?
The same thing is not necessarily suffering to two different people. Mm. To one person, suffering is having to go out and sweat in the heat. Another person, suffering might be having to go shopping. So it's not like universal. It seems to be personalized sometimes.
Absolutely. That's a great point. Veerdamal makes a similar point. He said that two people might be poor, and so having poverty is suffering. But one person may have peace of mind, and the next person may have spiritual suffering. And so it's that spiritual suffering, he says, that Buddhism addresses. And then he gives other examples of, you know, someone offends one person and that person goes into deep suffering, and the next person starts laughing because he doesn't have that deep suffering.
You know, I think the common denominator of the two examples you just gave is both people want the thing to go away, and that's the suffering.
Yeah.
I think. You know, Shohaku has this really great way. He's boiled as many things as he's done. It's really great. He's boiled it all down to, traditional Buddhist view of the world is there's independence and there's interdependence. And if you don't face those things with sort of the attitude that we cultivate in Zazen, then, you know, you have suffering, or you can have nirvana. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just a really great way to just boil it. You know, just kind of like, okay, this is reality, and you can face it this way, or you can face it this way, and you can have this, or you can have that.
That's right. So, in fact, just a word about that.
I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, clearly.
You know, Shohaku goes through, you know, the syllables and how long it comes from ancient China. There's so much more meaning to it.
But you got there in 20 seconds.
Well, only from listening to him
for yes, right.
20 years.
No, absolutely. But that's, you know, Viradamo and Thich Nhat Hanh also make the point of, you know, well, what do you do with the dependent? How do you use that? And the key is that when we have contact with something painful, if we meet it with ignorance, then the dependent chain gets started in motion. On the other hand, if we meet it with wisdom, then there's an expression in Thailand, throwing it back. We throw it back. And so, mentioning Shohaku, that's another phrase comes to mind, his instruction for doing Zazen. He says, make a strong determination to do nothing with whatever arises. Just let go, be right here, right now. And I say that to myself very often because I say, okay, what am I doing here? Oh, that's what I'm doing.
What do you want?
Oh,
I didn't say anything, so don't keep looking at me.
Oh, I'm just looking at her. I thought you were going to say something.
We're all waiting for you to say
yeah,
something.
I know you are. My mind says shut up.
That's kind. Any other comments? Well, okay. Yeah, Peter.
No, just thank you, Chuck, for your talk today.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I appreciate it.